Welcome back to Vocal Point. This is Jerry Newcomb. Are America's best days behind us? Well, they don't have to be, says New York Times bestselling author and former U.S. Senator Jim DeMint. He's now the president of Heritage Foundation, a respected think tank in Washington, D.C., and the author of the new book, Falling in Love with America Again. Senator, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about this country we all love.
Sure. And let me start by asking you something that you opened the book with. You explain why it is you left a position that some people would sell their souls for, a position of being U.S. Senator, and you left not because the voters turned you out. You left of your own volition. Why?
Unfortunately, I think a number of people have sold their souls to get in the Senate. What I saw over the years is that we could not win the political debate until we won the debate with the American people. And too often we've seen people vote for folks who actually advocate ideas that hurt them. And I spent a lot of time when I was in the Senate helping to elect, I think, a bright new generation of conservatives. But it wasn't enough. And I'm convinced that our ideas as conservatives unite the country, that they have not been presented in a positive way. So at the Heritage Foundation, we're not only working on the research and the innovative policies that we know work, but we're spending a lot of time and effort figuring out how to communicate and connect with Americans in a way that we never have before.
So in other words, you basically felt that you could be of greater influence to help work toward the cause of American renewal by being the head of the Heritage Foundation versus being one of the U.S. senators?
There's no question about it. The battle to save our country is outside of Washington, and over the next few years, the House and the Senate, they're not going to do anything positive for the country, given the president that we have right now. And what, in the meantime, what we have to do is clear the path for good candidates to run on the right ideas and win election, and then to do the right thing once they're in office. Milton Friedman once said, we have to create an environment where even the wrong people will do the right thing. And that means going out across the country and convincing people, young people, minorities, people from all walks of life, that a strong economy, a strong culture, and a strong country are needed in order for them to have a better way of life.
All right, now, in the book, you open up with a phrase, or a quote rather, from Edmund Burke, and he uses a phrase that you use really throughout the book. The phrase is little platoons. Can you explain what it means and why you chose to use that allusion?
Well, this is what America is. It's a combination of thousands and thousands of little platoons made up of individuals who care about each other, who serve each other. And Edmund Burke lived over 200 years ago. He was a British statesman, but he actually supported the American Revolution. And he said that these little platoons, those people that are closest to us, our families, our church groups, the small businesses where we work, the charity groups that we serve with to help improve our community, these are the groups that give us affection for each other as well as affection for our country.
Well, Dr. Ben Carson wrote the foreword in your book, and he explained how it was the little platoons in his life, and he said, quote, his remarkably single mom, dedicated ministers, and some truly caring neighbors. It was those little platoons that shielded him from the corrosive effects of racism. So this theme of little platoons. Now, that's contrasted. The little platoons are contrasted with what you call the bigs, and I assume by that you mean the Big Brother, big government. What do you mean by the bigs?
Well, there's this misconception that big government is going to help the little guy. In fact, the guy in the White House right now talks all about helping the poor, helping the middle class, when in fact all the evidence, I've seen it directly, but all the evidence should be abundantly clear to people that big government does not help the poor, does not help the middle class. It helps other bigs, big unions, big corporations, big banks, big lobby firms, and I give example after example of the book of when the doors close and legislation is written, it's not written to help the little guy. Obamacare was not written to help the uninsured. It was written by the big insurance companies and big hospitals to force people into the health insurance market who didn't want to be in order to enrich the bigs. And I talk about it as Bigonomics, but what I want Americans to remember is, first of all, we were different than any other country because we were built from the ground up. And if we try to be like other countries with centralizing education, health care, energy development, transportation, housing, all the things that are happening now in Washington, we're going to destroy this country we love. But the good news is, and I give example after example around the country, that these little platoons led by individuals who care about others are all over the country. They're still working, but they're not working as well as they could because Big Brother is snuffing many of them out and replacing them with ideas and solutions that don't work.
Well, let's take Obamacare for a moment, since that's obviously in the news as we record this segment. How is Obamacare wrong for America?
It's another centrally planned idea. Instead of 50 states competing for the best health care system, what we've got is one big central plan, which is impossible to carry out. You cannot have one central government determining the health care needs for over 300 million Americans. And we're seeing how that's falling apart all around us. What we needed to do is improve the system that we had. We had some people who were not insured, but most people were happy with the insurance they had. We didn't need to replace the whole system with this government-run idea. And so Obamacare is not going to help the little guy. And I think what people are starting to figure out is they wrote this thing to force a lot of young, healthy people to buy insurance so it would be less expensive for older, more infirmed people. Now, some may think that's a good idea, but I think once the young people realize they're not only having to buy an insurance product they don't want, but they're having to buy a lot of things in that policy that they don't want.
And furthermore, a lot of them just can't afford it. I mean, honestly, it's like, where does this money come from? Many of them are in their parents' basements. They've not been able to get a good job, and some of them are even saddled with government school debt.
Yeah, and that government school debt, again, is another reminder, supposedly was going to help young people. But what happens is the easier it is to borrow money for college, the more they raise tuition rates, the more people have to borrow to go to college. And you've got a lot of Americans now, young Americans, with large amounts of debt and no jobs to pay them back.
Right.
And it's just another example of big government was enriching the big banks who were helping to deal with these loans. It was not helping the students.
Well, now let's go back to Obamacare specifically, since you deal, I assume, with politicians or would-be politicians. What would you recommend that we should do as far as Obamacare? I mean, it seems like the best thing would be a complete overhaul, but is that realistic?
Well, I hope it's realistic, because I've said many times giving up on repealing Obamacare is in many ways giving up on the country, because if you have government-run health care in America along with the other aspects of government control, it's hard to say that we still have a free market, free America as we know it. I think the system will collapse. Obamacare will collapse in some ways. But what you're going to see is the people who advocated for Obamacare are going to say, okay, all we need to do now to fix it is just have a what they call a single-payer, totally government-run system. And that's what they'll be advocating for pretty soon. But what we need to do in the meantime, what we're doing at Heritage is developing alternatives to that. We're also pointing out in the book that you've got a lot of Christians who've gotten together, thousands of them, under Samaritan Health System and actually insure themselves, pay their own health care bills. And it's a system that works, and we need to allow it to work and grow because the more personal and private effort we have, the better the whole system is going to work.
Well, now let me ask you this. On a political front, it seems as if there are some who care about the political issues But they care about really the social issues. They're very concerned about the abortion ethic. They're opposed to same-sex marriage and so forth. Then there are others, let's say, who call themselves conservatives, who are, let's say, conservative fiscally. Is there a way in which these two could be married? I mean, Ronald Reagan did such a great job of combining all kinds of different conservatives, even those who would disagree with each other on some issues like this, but he saw the bigger picture and was able to articulate it.
I think the two have to go together, and we probably need to stop talking about social issues and talk about our culture. And at Heritage, we refer to it as culture and opportunity, because the family is essential to building that economic unit that can help people enjoy the opportunity that we talk about in the country. The biggest problem we have in this country today are broken homes where children are raised by a single mom, and I'm not criticizing them because I was raised by a single mom, but it makes it much harder to create that environment where a child learns what they need to succeed.
All right, we're talking right now with Jim DeMint, best-selling author, by the way, and he has a new book out called Falling in Love with America Again. Now, getting back to the family issue, some have said, well, this is really a post-marital society. We even see the growing acceptance of the redefinition of marriage as to mean same-sex marriage even. And, of course, if that really becomes entrenched, it wouldn't stop there. Then next thing you know it, there would be more than just two people, and maybe can include other arrangements as well.
Well, I personally don't think the government has the right, particularly at the federal level, to redefine marriage. It's always been regulated by the states, but never redefined by the states. Marriage was, in effect, created by the church, regulated by the states. For the government to come in and start redefining our civil institutions makes no sense, particularly when we know that marriage is important to family formation, is important to raising children and creating a society that works. And this is not just a moral or religious opinion. At Heritage, we've researched the family, the implications of broken families for years, and most of the problems that we're trying to deal with in Washington can be related one way or another to the breakdown of the family that has been incentivized by government programs.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing. I've interviewed you before, by the way, and I thank you for that privilege. And you used a phrase once that I've never forgotten, perverse incentives. You said that sometimes we have built within such things, let's say welfare, where we have perverse incentives. We've chased dad out of the house, then those inner city marriages collapse, so now you have single-parent households, and they're reinforced if they have more children, doesn't matter who the father is. And so we have these perverse incentives where we're creating a worse problem than the problem we set out to solve as government.
Yeah, I think there's some good intentions involved with this, but most of the time it's people who just really believe the only way to help people is to control them. With these one-size-fits-all solutions.
Yeah.
We know, and again, I give a lot of examples in the book of people who are poor and down and out, who are helped more by local church groups, individuals and communities, and they just do so much more good and help people get on their feet and not trap them in dependency. But as you know, I mean, the welfare programs will help you unless you're married, or if you're working and you start losing benefits quicker than you can replace them. And so we need to create a way out of these programs when we put people on them. They need to be safety nets, but they shouldn't be traps. But they're hurting people. And as you said, they're chasing fathers out of the picture because you can't get the support if you've got marriage.
So basically we have a situation where government says, oh, look at all these problems we've got in society, many of which are caused by fatherlessness in America, by the breakdown of the family. And then government says, well, let's go ahead and we'll be the solution. And they don't realize what they're doing is just exacerbating the problem at hand.
Over and over again. Again, I cover that in the book of a government that will try one solution that creates five or six unintended consequences and more government solutions. And that's really, if you look at school dropout, drug use, incarceration, all of that is related, very related to the breakdown of the family.
All right, so let me ask you a question. Are you optimistic or pessimistic as far as America? Do you think our best days are behind us, or what do you think?
I think our best days are in front of us if Americans remember why we were great in the first place. And that's the whole point of this book, is to remind people we were different than any other country, and that's why we were bigger, stronger, and more prosperous than any other country. All around the country, the solutions are right in front of us. School choice is helping young children, poor children, minority children all over the country. Yet we still have big government and big unions standing in the way of us expanding it. And we've got examples of where health care is working for everyone, the poor, minorities, yet big government is trying to replace those solutions with big government solutions. So all we need is for the people around this country to look in front of their eyes, see what's working. Thankfully, Obamacare and cities like Detroit are beginning to show people that these liberal policies, they don't work. They don't work for anyone. In fact, they often just enrich the people who are behind creating these programs. So I hope to travel the country along with a lot of people from Heritage to remind people that it's these local and statewide solutions that work. If we have 50 states competing for the best schools, the best healthcare system, the best energy development plan, the best transportation systems, we're going to have a vibrant nation that's full of opportunity. And it won't take long to do it, because the base of it is already out there working if the federal government would just get out of the way.
What would the founding fathers say about all this? What would they say about modern America?
They would be very concerned about the central control. The whole point of the Constitution was to limit what the federal government could do, to focus the federal government on defending the country and making sure there was, in effect, a free trade zone between the states. Other than that, everything else was left to the states and to the people, is the way they said. And they never intended for us to be a big central government. And so this progressive, the whole idea of being progressive is to progress away from those ideas that made this country great. What we're trying to conserve as conservatives are those things that work. They work today. They work for young people. They work for minorities. And we can change this country and change its course very quickly if we just remember what works.
Okay, now what if somebody, let's say you're talking with a liberal person and they were to turn around and say, oh yeah, well, that Founding Fathers thing worked out really well. Look at the Civil War we had 80 or so years later.
Well, the reason that the slaves were eventually freed was the Constitution. I mean, it was like the conscience of the American people. And unfortunately, there were some court decisions like Dred Scott and others that defined some people as property. But the Constitution kept calling us back to all men are created equal. And we have inalienable rights in the minds of God. But a lot of the move to free the slaves came from the people. It did not come from the federal government. It came from just a growing movement among the people, particularly people of faith, that this was wrong. And people like Wilberforce in
England,
Britain,
yeah,
who persisted for years,
right,
because of his faith, because of his love for people. So no liberal is going to be able to win a debate that big government freed the slaves. In fact, it was Abraham Lincoln, the very first Republican, who took this on as a cause. And a lot of it was based on a love in his heart that comes from God.
Yeah. You know, it's so amazing, though, how much the Republican brand, and I don't want to be partisan here in the interview, but since you bring up the Republican, I'll just say this. The Republican brand has certainly been hurt in some quarters. I am involved in some charity work in the name of Christ, helping with food delivery and so forth. And I remember seeing this bumper sticker. I've seen it a few times in this one very bad neighborhood. And it says something like this: any working person who votes for a Republican is like a chicken who votes for Colonel Sanders. So I think we have a lot of work to do to kind of re-educate people about what we're talking about here.
We do, but fortunately we don't have to argue political philosophy. All we have to do is show people what's right in front of their face, what's working. And just like the left told us 10 years ago school choice was for the rich, we all knew the rich already had school choice. It was the poor that needed it, and it's the poor minority children that are benefiting.
Yes.
And if people just look at who's trying to block that, it's the left, progressive, big government, big unions are trying to stop it, even though it's working primarily for the poor. So what we're doing is trying to hold reality in front of people. I'm not worried too much about the political brands. If people just look up and pay attention and vote for themselves, they'll end up voting for the people who I think promote those basic conservative ideas.
Sure. All right, we're talking right now with Jim DeMint. Again, his book is called Falling in Love with America Again, and he is the president of Heritage Foundation. By the way, congratulations on that position. I think that's just the second president in the history of the organization, correct?
I think there was one for the first couple of years. Maybe the third, but Ed Fuller was president for 36 years, so I've got big shoes to fill.
Who actually founded it? Did Ronald Reagan have anything to do with the founding of it?
No, it was actually founded before Ronald Reagan, but Heritage made a name for itself when it presented the Reagan administration with what was called a mandate for leadership. And Reagan built most of his free market ideas off of that mandate for leadership. And ever since then, Heritage has been at the forefront of reform and policy innovation.
Now, in the book, you talk about federalism. I'll bet your average American today doesn't even know what that means. What is federalism and why should we know?
Yeah, we hesitate to even use the word because it sounds like more federal government. But what it is the reminder that America was a federation of independent states, basically, that were held together by this federal government that would defend us and make sure that the states could work together. Federalism is the idea of moving power, decisions, and money out of Washington, back to the states and to the people, and let states compete for the best place to live and work and do business. And we're seeing that happen now, and I point out a lot of the states that are improving their economies when other states are going in the other direction. The best thing we can do is vote for people, regardless of political label, who say, I'm not going to go to Washington and solve your problems. I'm going to go to Washington and move the power out of Washington back to the states where it can work.
Wow. Well, that's kind of like the old term limits thing. You know, if somebody, let's say a would-be politician, advocates term limits, and by the way, I think it's easy to see the Founding Fathers as essentially affirming a type of term limits type of mentality. But anyway, that person, that candidate, let's say they win, might be popular with the voters in promoting term limits, but then might not be very popular with his peers in Washington, D.C.
Well, I found that to be true because Washington is built in many ways on seniority, and when I came into the House and announced I was going to only be there three terms, and I did the same thing in the Senate, folks did a lot to try to reduce my ability to get things done. But fortunately, I found by working with people all over the country, I ended up with more clout than a lot of senior members. So term limits are a good idea. They're going to need to start at the state level where we see a number of states now limiting their legislators. Hopefully we can get more and more states to do that, and then eventually we can do it for Congress.
You know, by the way, when we were talking about federalism just a moment ago, I'm reminded of something the political scientist and author Donald Lutz, who wrote a book called The Origins of American Constitutionalism, he once told me in an interview that the word federal is actually derived from the Latin for covenant. It was as if the 13 colonies, now as states, were making a covenant with each other to form the federal unit or federal government. But these states had a lot of power. And in fact, you can see that the Bill of Rights are really, as my friend Bill Federer likes to say, there were handcuffs on the power of the federal government, and these were rights that belonged to the states and to the people, the right of religion, the right of free speech, etc.
Yeah, and liberals don't like that. As President Obama said before he was president, that he doesn't think the Constitution is complete because it tells the government what it can't do, but it doesn't tell the government what it must do. That's the whole point of the Constitution. It was a covenant. It was a contract that limited what the federal government could do so that the states and people could actually solve their own problems and create a better way of life. And when people do that, and I'll conclude here because I need to jump off.
Sure.
There's millions of people who disagree on a lot of things can live together in unity, care about each other, love each other, as long as one is not allowed to force their ideas and beliefs on others. And if America, despite our differences and failures, have been remarkably diverse and remarkably united around core ideas for the first couple of centuries of our existence. But over the last few decades, what you've seen is more and more central power forcing one-size-fits-all solutions on people, and that's dividing us. It's creating resentment. We see it particularly now on the religious front, where people of faith are being forced to participate in things that they think are wrong. And hopefully the Supreme Court will liberate people of faith in this country. We don't know where it's going to come out. But we're in the fight of our lives here with big central planners mm-hmm. who want to run our lives. What we need to demand as citizens, regardless of whether we think we're Republican or Democrat or whatever the label, mm-hmm. is we don't want one-size-fits-all solutions because they don't work.
And your website is heritage.org?
Heritage.org, and we appreciate folks coming to see us. And I hope I'll get a chance to see people as I go out around the country this year.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim DeMint. God bless you.
All right. Thanks.
Appreciate that. That is Jim DeMint. Again, the name of his book is Falling in Love with America Again. And the website for more information is heritage.org. This is Jerry Newcomb. God bless you. We'll see you next week.